Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
I'm Kathy with a C.
And I'm Kathy with a K.
And this is Killer Destinations. Today's destination is Red Bluff, California. Red Bluff is a city of almost 15,000 residents located in Northern California, about 2 hours north of the state capital, Sacramento, and is bisected by the Interstate 5, the main north-south route along the west coast of the United States. The city was given its name due to the red bluffs that were once prominent along the banks of the Sacramento River, where it's located. Spanish explorers were the first Europeans to come to this area. In 1850, Charles Wilson and Satchel Woods began developing a town which they named Leodosia. Later, it was called Covertsburg before finally being given the name Red Bluff. It was incorporated as a city in 1876. Red Bluff became a busy port for paddle wheel steamers and was the head of navigation on the Sacramento River for over a century. Today, Red Bluff is a nature lover's dream. You'll encounter local ecosystems along the beautiful trails that wind along the river, and bird watchers will be enthralled by the Sacramento National Wildlife Refuge Complex, which attracts over 300 bird species throughout the year. Biking and hiking trails weave through volcanic cliffs and local flora. Also, at the William B. Ide Adobe State Historic Park, visitors can step back in time and explore California's early pioneer history. Not only does the city boast unparalleled outdoor activities, but it is also home to the Red Bluff Roundup, the largest three-day rodeo in the country that has been drawing in cowboys and cowgirls for over 100 years. In the downtown area, you'll find a thriving community full of history, beauty, and charm with all the friendliness of a small town. But in 1977, one predator came to town and used this unsuspecting community to hide his unspeakable viciousness.
On a spring day in May 1977, 20-year-old Colleen Stan decided she was going to surprise a close friend by showing up for her birthday. She lived in Eugene, Oregon, and her friend lived about 400 miles south in the small community of Westwood, California. And for those Californians, this Westwood obviously is in Northern California, not to be confused with the area in West Los Angeles in Southern California. But even though her car wasn't up for the long drive, she didn't let it deter her. Colleen decided to hitchhike. This was the 1970s, so she'd already been hitchhiking for years, and so she set off from her home in Eugene to find a ride. The fastest way to go south to California was to take Interstate 5, so Colleen set off for the highway. Her preference was to get rides from truckers, and she was able to do that most of the way there. And Kath, that's how different hitchhiking was then. Like nowadays, I think people would be more afraid of most truckers.
Right, like I don't want to get into somebody who has a traveling bedroom.
Exactly.
You know?
The last trucker dropped her off in Red Bluff, which was about 100 miles away from her friend's house. Colleen had fewer options because the route to Westwood wasn't a major truck thoroughfare, but Colleen wasn't worried. Now, she turned down the first few cars that pulled over. Kath, one was a van with 5 20-something guys in it, and when they pulled over, the guys in the back like slid the panel door open, and they were like, hey, we'll give you a ride. And she was like, no, thank you.
Right. I could no.
Exactly. So, hard pass. And a couple of other cars that stopped also just didn't feel right, so she waved them on. But then a small car pulled over and Colleen felt immediate relief. It was a young couple. She guessed them to be about her age, and the young woman was holding their small baby daughter in her lap. Again, 70s, no judgment for having no car seats.
The 70s, of course, also included lava lamps, cigarettes, what else?
Bell bottoms,
and one drink for the road. Oh,
it's a wonder anyone survived.
Exactly.
So, being comfortable with the people in the car, Colleen climbed into the back seat and off they went.
The couple introduced themselves as Cameron and Janice Hooker. He was 23 years old and worked at a lumber mill, and his 19-year-old wife stayed home with their baby, who was just a few months old. They'd been married for just 2 years. They chatted for about 20 minutes before Cameron pulled off the road to get gas. Colleen used the restroom, and soon they were on the road again. Cameron then asked her if it would be okay if they stopped at some ice caves that were ahead because the couple had planned to stop there on their trip. Colleen agreed and said it would be fine as long as it didn't take too long. She wanted to get to her friend's house before it got too late because her friend didn't know she was coming and she didn't want her friend to be gone for the evening. So after driving for another 30 minutes or so, Cameron pulled off the highway and traveled down a dirt road in the direction of some hills off in the distance. He stopped before he got there, however, and said that he and his wife Janice were going to go look at the lake first. Colleen waited in the back seat.
My thought was she stayed in the back seat because she was like, I don't want them to ditch me out here. There's nothing out here.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. I thought she was like, I've seen a lake.
Yeah.
We have lakes in Oregon.
We got better lakes in Oregon.
We have Crater Lake. Nah, 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 nah.
We have Shasta Lake in California. Nah, 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 nah.
Then, without warning, Cameron opened the back passenger door and climbed in with her. He held a butcher knife to her throat as he handcuffed her, blindfolded her, and gagged her. Then he put something over her head, and Colleen knew immediately what it was. When she'd gotten in the back seat after using the bathroom at the gas station, she'd seen a wooden box on the seat that hadn't been there before. It was a square box that was about 12 inches on each side with hinges, and it had a circle cut out of the bottom of the box. With Colleen already blindfolded and gagged, when Cameron forced this contraption over her head, she was completely shut off from the outside world. So, Kath, this was a box that obviously went over her head. He snapped it shut and it rested on top of her shoulders, but she could see and hear nothing. Colleen's mind began to race with all the possible things Cameron and Janice might do to her.
Before we get to the next part, we just wanted to give everyone a heads up. We don't normally do this, but this gets kind of graphic. So if you're listening to this with kids or driving and can't be distracted, you might want to turn this off and give us a listen a little bit later. When they got to the Hooker's house, Cameron took Colleen down to their basement. He then took the wooden box off her head, stripped her of her clothing, and hung her by her arms from the basement rafters. As you can imagine, Colleen was in agony. But whenever she cried out or tried to find something she could put her feet on to relieve some of the pain, Cameron whipped her. Through her blindfold, Colleen saw a magazine open to a picture of a woman who was hung much like she was. After she'd been hanging for what she thought was about 10 to 15 minutes, Cameron finally let her rest her toes on a box. Then, again from under the blindfold, Colleen saw Janice enter the basement and she and Cameron started having sex. When they finished, Cameron took away the box he'd given Colleen to rest her feet on and hung her from the rafters for another 10 to 15 minutes. When Colleen was finally taken down, Cameron put her in a 3-foot by 6-foot coffin-like box in the basement. He chained her wrists, put the head box back on her head, and tied her feet to the box. The next day, Cameron took her out of the box, put her on a homemade rack, and chained her wrists and ankles to the corners of it. He then left Colleen this way until the following day. Cameron finally gave her some food after the first couple of days in captivity, but when she didn't eat all of it, he became incensed and whipped her. He then forced Colleen to finish the meal and then put her back on his homemade rack. And tragically, Colleen had no way of knowing that this was just the beginning. For the next 5 months, Cameron kept her naked, bound, blindfolded, and gagged in the basement. She was tortured, raped, and defiled. She was kept in the coffin-like box, leaving it only once a day to eat, drink, urinate, and defecate, always in Cameron's presence. During this time, Cameron regularly practiced bondage on Colleen, suspending her from the rafters, putting her on a stretcher. And Kath, you know, it's a flat board that, again, your appendages are tied to the corners. But in this case, it gets turned so that your body's stretching in ways it shouldn't go. He also constricted her breathing, whipped her, and kept her head encased in the head box, tying her to the rack and then shocking her with electrical cords. She was also immersed in the bathtub until she was unable to breathe. Kath, his wife Janice would watch as Colleen was tortured, and then they'd have sex in front of her.
In October 1977, this was about 6 months after Colleen had been kidnapped by Cameron and Janice, Cameron built a triangular-shaped box that fit under the stairs in the basement. He referred to it as Colleen's workshop, and she was kept locked inside during the day. At night, she had to submit to Cameron's bondage practices. It was around this time that Cameron told Colleen that he was a member of an underground organization called The Company that bought and sold slaves and tortured those who tried to escape. He said the company's members were everywhere, constantly watching slaves for signs of escape. Cameron also told Colleen that the company was a danger not only to her, but also to her family. They were watching her family just in case Colleen escaped and tried to reach out for help. The truth about the company's existence was proven just a few months later when Janice came home after having had knee surgery. Cameron told Colleen that Janice had once been a slave who had tried to escape from her master. When she was caught, the company tortured Janice, causing damage to her legs. Janice told Colleen that what Cameron had told her about the reason for her surgery was true. Just a few weeks later, now this is around January 1978, 8 months after Colleen was kidnapped, Cameron presented Colleen with a slave contract for her to sign. This contract stipulated that Colleen was to be Cameron's slave and that he owned her soul. When Colleen balked at signing it, Cameron told her that she had to do it because a representative of the company was waiting. If she didn't sign it, both Colleen and her family would be harmed. In tears, Colleen signed the contract. After she signed the contract, Colleen was called K, just the letter K, not an actual name, and was allowed to leave the basement and live upstairs. So, Kath, I am sure this was designed to impress upon her that she was no longer a person, but an object, a piece of property. At Cameron's instruction, Colleen could only address him as Master or Sir and called Janice Ma'am. Colleen was also required to kneel, bow her head, and ask permission before doing anything. And Cameron placed a collar around her neck as a symbol of her slavery. And Kath, eventually this collar wore out, as did a subsequent one that he put on her. So instead of giving her a third collar, he basically pierced her girly parts.
Her no-no parts?
Exactly, as a symbol of his ownership. In the weeks that followed, Cameron had sex once with Colleen in Janice's presence. Janice had apparently suggested that this might excite her, but it actually only upset her. And after this incident, Cameron said he wouldn't have sex with Colleen and instead used her solely for purposes of bondage. In April of 1978, almost a year after being taken, the Hookers moved into a single-wide mobile home in Red Bluff, taking Colleen with them. Since the mobile home didn't have a basement for Cameron to keep Colleen, he had to find somewhere else to keep her chained up. So he built a pedestal for the waterbed in which he and Colleen slept and constructed a box underneath it for Colleen. For the rest of that year, Colleen spent all day and most of the night living in this box, being let out only late at night. She was allowed to have toilet paper, a bedpan, and a radio with her in the new box. And Kat, 5 months after they moved, you know, from their home to the mobile home, Janice gave birth to her second child at home in the waterbed while Colleen was in the box underneath it.
I don't even know what to say to that.
I know, crazy.
After almost 2 years of captivity, Colleen had resigned herself to being Cameron's slave for the rest of her life. And it was around this same time that she was given more freedom. Janice began working at night after Cameron came home from his job, and during this time, Colleen was let out of the box under the waterbed in the evenings to fix his dinner and wash his dishes. In June of 1980, Janice got a day job. So because of this, Cameron let Colleen babysit their two daughters while he and Janice were at work. So Colleen was introduced to the Hooker children and the neighbors in the mobile home park as the children's new babysitter. They now had a reason to justify Colleen suddenly appearing out of nowhere. Now, during this time, rather than being forced to sleep in the box under the waterbed, Colleen slept in the back bathroom, chained to the toilet. This arrangement, however, only lasted for 8 months because Cameron forced Janice to quit working because he wanted to put Colleen back in the box. You know, Kath, I'm assuming he did this because, like, every day, I'm sure he was freaking out that Colleen was going to do something that would let somebody know what was going on. But this whole time, Colleen had never tried to escape. She knew she couldn't. She was so certain, down to her bones, that the company would track down and torture her family if she escaped, that it never even crossed her mind. That's why she had thought, I'm going to be a slave here forever. But that didn't matter because Cameron wanted her back in the box.
In 1980, now 3 years into captivity, Colleen had learned how to be a good slave to protect herself from Cameron's rage. So even though it was untrue, she told him that she loved him. She hoped that by saying this, he might treat her better and give her a little bit more freedom. And it worked. In the past couple of years, Colleen had asked Cameron for permission to visit her parents. She promised she wouldn't say anything and that she wouldn't get him in trouble. She just wanted to see them and make sure they were okay. So now she was allowed to make a few phone calls to her family while Cameron stood next to her and listened to the conversation. Then, in February of 1981, he decided to take her to Riverside, California, where her family now lived, so she could see her parents. Before the trip, Cameron told Colleen that he had to get permission from the company and put up a $30,000 security deposit to cover the company's costs of watching Colleen and her family. And at this point, Cameron didn't want Colleen seen in public anymore. So a week before the trip, at Cameron's instruction, Colleen told the two Hooker children and the neighbors that she was moving away. And as a test of her obedience, Cameron had Colleen place a gun in her mouth and pull the trigger. Fortunately, the gun was empty. Having passed these tests, Cameron took Colleen to Riverside for 2 days. The morning of the trip, Cameron drove off as if he were taking her to the bus station, but of course, after the trip, he later smuggled her back inside the mobile home and kept her in the box under the waterbed. On the way to see her family, they stopped in Sacramento at the company's headquarters. Cameron had told her that before they got to her family's home, the company would make her take a lie detector test. Colleen was nervous about being able to pass it. In Sacramento, while Cameron went into the building to talk to somebody at the company, Colleen waited in the car. A little while later, he came back with the good news that the company had waived the test requirement. In Riverside, Cameron was introduced as Colleen's boyfriend. During the trip, Colleen saw many members of her family and was even left alone with them at times. But as much as Colleen wanted to tell her family the truth, she was absolutely terrified that the company would kill them. When they returned from Riverside, Cameron put Colleen back in the box under the waterbed.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the next 3 years, from March 1981 to May 1984, Colleen lived in the box. During most of this time, Cameron let her out for only short periods each evening. For years after Colleen told the Hooker children that she was moving, they were unaware of Colleen's presence in their home. But it was also during this time that Cameron admitted to Janice that when he was practicing bondage on Colleen, he was also having sex with her. Janice was upset and hurt when she heard this because she'd been clear with him that she didn't want him to have sex with anyone but her. Trying to please his wife, Cameron began requiring Janice to read the Bible to him, and he would point out all the passages that required wives and slaves to be submissive.
Jesus really loves it when you manipulate his message for evil.
He also told Janice that he was preparing dungeons in order that he might keep as many as 4 slaves. At the end of 1983, Cameron moved Colleen from the box under the bed into a hole that they'd dug on their property. Kath, Colleen had been forced to dig this hole with Cameron while Janice stood guard, and the hole took 2 years to complete, and it was lined with concrete blocks. A week after Colleen was forced into the hole, it began to rain, and it began to fill with water. So Janice took Colleen out and put her back in the box under their bed. Once the rain stopped, Cameron put Colleen back in the hole. But about a week later, he and Janice began to suspect that one of their children had seen Colleen in the hole, so they moved her back under the bed once again. In January 1984, after 6.5 years in captivity, Colleen was again allowed more freedom. However, freedom was a relative term because she was still terrified about the company's threat to her and her family. She was let out of the box at night and again slept in the back bathroom. 5 months later, Colleen began to work as a maid at a motel in Red Bluff a few miles from the mobile home. Sometimes Janice drove her to work, and sometimes Colleen rode a bicycle. But Colleen had to give her paychecks to Cameron, who gave her about $20 in spending money. But within 6 months, Kath, Janice was beginning to unravel. Even though she continued to tell Cameron that she didn't want him to have sex with Colleen, he continued to do so. He told Janice that Colleen was his slave wife, comparing his slave to Abraham's biblical servant Hagar. According to court records, Janice participated in these acts because she thought she had to do so or go to hell. That same month, Cameron announced that he would have sex with Colleen and Janice on alternate nights. Neither of the women liked this arrangement, and Kath, I'm sure Janice didn't like the arrangement because she didn't want her husband having sex with Colleen, and Colleen didn't like the arrangement because she didn't want to have sex with Cameron in the first place. Nevertheless, both Janice and Colleen felt they had to submit to it. It was this proclamation by Cameron that led Janice to tell someone about Colleen for the very first time. She went to her church pastor and told him the way in which they'd been living for the past 7 years. The pastor advised Janice to send Colleen home, leave Cameron, or turn him into the authorities. Janice's decision was not to do anything. Instead, she just continued on while it was eating her up inside.
By August of 1984, 7 years after Colleen's abduction, Janice thought she was having a nervous breakdown. She once again spoke with her church pastor, who advised Janice that both she and Colleen should leave. Janice went to the motel where Colleen was working and admitted to her that there was no company. Colleen was devastated by the news.
She had to have been. Like, that was her foundation for staying. It was her foundation for submitting.
Totally.
And accepting the fact that she would be a slave for life.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It was the threat of the company that kept her compliant. The two women then visited the pastor again together before returning home to spend the night in the mobile home with Cameron. A few days later, after Cameron went to work, Janice and Colleen took the children and went to Janice's parents' house. Colleen called her own parents and arranged for them to wire her bus fare. The next day, Colleen left for home. She called Cameron from the bus station and told him that she was leaving and there was nothing he could do to keep her in Red Bluff. The next morning, Colleen's family met her at the bus station in Riverside, where she told them some of what had happened to her during the past 7 years. Back in Red Bluff, after only a week apart, Janice moved back into the mobile home with Cameron. He began attending church with her for a while, and Janice urged him to obtain counseling. At Janice's request, the two of them destroyed some of his bondage paraphernalia. And what wasn't destroyed, Janice hid because she was afraid he would use them on her because Colleen was no longer there. Unable to eat and sleep in the mobile home, Janice returned to her parents a month later. During the next few months, Colleen continued to communicate by letter and telephone with Janice and Cameron. Both of them were very concerned that Colleen would contact police, so Janice begged her not to because she wanted to give her husband a chance to straighten himself out. Despite Colleen's family pressuring her to turn them both in, Colleen was grateful to have been released and wanted to forget the entire incident. So she agreed to Janice's request. But a couple months later, in early November 1984, Janice was deeply afraid that Cameron would hurt her or the children. So she once again talked with her pastor, who contacted law enforcement.
So, Kath, after Janice contacted law enforcement, she actually had another story to tell police. She, of course, went through the entire thing with Colleen Stan and the crimes that her husband had committed, but she also told them that Colleen was not the couple's first victim. About 18 months before Colleen's abduction, around January of 1976, Janice and Cameron had picked up an 18-year-old girl named Marie Elizabeth Spanicky and brought her to their home. She had been taken from Chico, California, after she was at a flea market with her boyfriend and they got into an argument. And so she's like, bye, I'm walking home. Friends and family never saw her after that. And it's because she had run into Cameron and Janice Hooker.
Do you know if the boyfriend was blamed for that?
He was.
Of course.
And he was actually cleared of it.
That poor guy.
I know. So, of course, Cameron and Janice pick up Mary Elizabeth from the side of the road and then prevented her from exiting the vehicle like they had done with Colleen. Marie Elizabeth was also placed in a headbox. The two then drove Marie Elizabeth to their home, and this was the same place where they'd taken Colleen, where Cameron suspended Marie Elizabeth from the basement rafters and tortured her. But unlike Colleen, Marie Elizabeth would not stop screaming during this horrific ordeal. So Cameron attempted to cut out her vocal cords.
Unbelievable.
When this failed, he strangled her to death.
Oh my God.
Now, according to Janice, they buried her body in a shallow grave in a state park, and Northern California is lousy with state parks. Marie Elizabeth's body was never located, and neither of the Hookers were prosecuted in connection with their case because, other than Janice's word, there was no evidence that connected them.
Oh my God, I didn't even realize this part. So I'm hearing this for the first time, just like you guys are. That is so terrible.
Isn't that awful?
Poor parents.
I know.
Like, you know what happened to your daughter and you don't have her body back.
You can't even find it.
Yeah, you don't even know where to start.
Yeah, what state park?
God, that's terrible.
Based on Janice's conversation with police, Cameron Hooker was charged with kidnapping, false imprisonment, and multiple sex offenses. He pled not guilty to all charges. At trial, the jury was riveted by Colleen and Janice's testimony. Corroborating evidence was provided by the Hooker's neighbor and children, Colleen's sister, and the pastor who counseled Janice and Colleen. The trial court admitted into evidence over 100 pieces of physical evidence introduced by the prosecution, including the head box, photographs of Colleen in bondage that Cameron had taken, a copy of the slavery contract, the waterbed pedestal and its concealed box, and the stretcher. I would not have wanted to be on that jury for $1 million.
Same here. You can't unsee that stuff.
Exactly. That will stay with you the rest of your life.
Oh, totally.
Two expert witnesses also testified for the prosecution. A physician who examined Colleen after she left Red Bluff and a psychologist who offered his opinions about Colleen's captivity and her reactions to Cameron's treatment. The psychologist listed a number of factors that led him to conclude that Colleen was coerced into remaining with Cameron and obeying him. Cameron's conduct, which included isolation, forced nudity, abuse, withholding food and water, and creating an atmosphere of total dependency, among many other things, was an effective technique to coerce a victim into giving up any overt resistance to the captor. The psychologist testified that it would take someone like Colleen considerable time after her return to a normal life before being able to confront and accuse her captor. And during the trial, another expert witness testified that prior to Colleen Stan's abduction, no other person had been kidnapped for such a long period of time or subjected to the prolonged isolation and torture.
Well, the good news is that Cameron Hooker testified on his own behalf.
Thank you, Cameron.
Thank you. He insisted that Colleen consented to all of the sex acts, or at least he reasonably believed she had consented. He also said Colleen chose to stay because she loved him. He acknowledged lying to her about the company, but justified it by saying that a few months before they moved to the mobile home, he actually told her that he bought out her contract. One defense psychologist opined that Colleen was not coerced because she was not in physical captivity for the entire 7-year period, which he thought was an essential requirement of coercion. That's the obvious thing that everybody thinks about this case. You know, she had a job at a motel. She was able to ride her bike. So
she could have called her parents at any time.
Right. So, of course, the jury is going to go, huh, I don't get it.
She told him she loved him.
Yeah. And that's what the defense expert is going to hang their hat on.
Right.
You know,
he's hoping people are going to go, yeah, that's true. Why did she do that?
That's true. Why did she call him? Why did she write to him? Blah, blah, blah,
right.
blah, blah.
She could have gotten away at any time.
Yeah. It's the obvious fact that is very bothersome about this case. But it's obviously explicable when you look at all the lies and the torture. And Kath, this expert witness also testified that it wasn't reasonable for Colleen to believe in the existence of this, you know, underground slave ring run by the company. Instead, he said, Colleen stayed in the hooker home because she had fallen in love with Cameron and the children. And to corroborate this theory, Cameron placed into evidence several letters that he received from Colleen, as well as telephone records establishing the calls she made to the hookers after she left Red Bluff. But the jury didn't buy what Cameron Hooker was selling. In 1985, he was found guilty of kidnapping with use of a deadly weapon, forcible oral copulation, penetration with a foreign object, forcible sodomy, and 6 counts of rape. Cameron was sentenced to 1 to 25 years for the kidnapping, with a consecutive term of 5 to 10 years for the weapon use enhancement, to be followed by a 69-year term in state prison for the remaining offenses. What was the total?
104 years.
104 years, okay. And he was committed to a maximum security prison in San Mateo. At his sentencing hearing, the judge said Cameron was the most dangerous psychopath I have ever dealt with, who will be a danger to women as long as he is alive. Janice Hooker claimed she was also a victim of her husband's abuse, and she was never prosecuted for the role she played in Colleen's kidnapping and captivity because she made a deal with prosecutors to testify against her husband.
But as we all know, 104 years in prison lingo isn't 104 years. And in 2014, after serving 29 years in prison, Cameron Hooker was eligible for parole. Fortunately, parole was denied at the hearing, and he wasn't eligible for parole at this point for another 15 years. According to an article in the Red Bluff Daily News in November of 2023, according to the Tehama County District Attorney's Office, because of changes to state law that were beneficial to inmates, Hooker became eligible for parole in 2021 rather than 2030. To prevent Hooker from being released from prison, the Tehama County District Attorney, Matthew Rogers, sought to have him labeled a sexually violent predator. And so, Kath, in March of 2022, a probable cause hearing was scheduled to make this determination. If he was deemed to be a sexually violent predator, he would remain in prison. But if not, he would be released into a halfway house. But Kath, this hearing has been continuously delayed since that time. And to this date, so we're in March of 2023, a trial date has not yet been set. My understanding is that in 2021, Cameron Hooker was released into the custody of the State Department of Hospitals. So he is still technically incarcerated, but not in prison. In September 2016, more than 3 decades after surviving her horrific captivity, Colleen Stan spoke with People magazine. She said at the time that she kept her sanity while in the box by focusing on all her happy memories of her family and friends. She said, "I learned I could go anywhere in my mind. You just remove yourself from the real situation going on and you go somewhere else. You go somewhere pleasant around people you love, whatever makes you happy." At the time of this interview, which was 9 years ago, Colleen was married for the 4th time and raising her grandson, who today would be about 10 years old. Despite all that she'd been through, Colleen said that she has had a wonderful life since her escape and is grateful to be alive. Colleen also wrote a book in 2008 entitled The Simple Gifts of Life. In it, she speaks candidly about the terror she faced every day, and She said the reason she wanted to write the book was that although she'd done interviews and TV appearances over the years, they never told her true story. And she wanted her story to be truthful and complete.
Before we end, we want to talk about some of the episodes that we put on Patreon. We want to encourage people to do the free 7-day trial at the $10 level. And so some of the episodes that we put on Patreon, all of them, obviously, we love.
Are amazing.
Like, exactly. We put one up there just recently about a man in Belgium who had kidnapped multiple girls. What else do we have recently? We also put up...
We put up a story about a woman named Heather Saul in West Virginia who came face to face with a serial killer. And
we also did the story of Michelle Martinko, who was kidnapped from a mall in Iowa. And at the $10 level, you also get videos, right?
Right.
Yeah. Just give it a shot. Give it a try.
We hope you stay on, but if not, we hope you enjoy the extra content.
Exactly. And download everything. Download, download,
listen,
download.
Download, 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 but you're missing the rest of it, Kath. Download.
Listen.
Delete. Go team.
Engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.